So, are we ready? Who would like to pose the first question? Sean Fong, in the back there.
Hi, my question is, well, we're trying to publish faster, bigger volumes, faster, have a better turnout over time. My question is, as it is now, the volume of publications submitted for different magazines or journals is incredibly high. And there's a burnout on the reviews for those magazines. What are your take on that, on the context that we're discussing here? How can we improve or give something back to those reviewers that are getting this incredible and difficult task to do?
Right, so who would like to take that one on?
Is there someone in particular that you would like to ask that question to, or just the whole panel?
So I guess I'll try and answer that. So again, we know that this is an intractable problem, particularly since the number of experts in any particular field are declining. And I'm not sure that there is any magical bullet here. What we've tried to propose here is a way to provide additional crediting and validation for things. The only way that the number of reviewers is going to increase is if we have more people that are actively engaged in the process. I'm not sure that I have anything secret advantage to tell you in that regard.
Can I add to that a little bit? This is not particularly addressing the model that you just proposed, but I wanted...
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Sure.
So we'd like to record these presentations. I just realized the only recording mechanism is here in the middle. I don't know if... was that?
Should we hop up and down?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of inconvenient, but maybe. It's kind of void to the point of having all this fancy microphone.
I just wanted
you
to say that...
repeat questions.
Sure.
You can repeat questions when they ask us, but you probably don't need to repeat.
Okay. So for the Encyclopedia of Life Curator Network, I just wanted to make sure that people were aware that the way that we're hoping to give credit for those reviews is by having them appear in a citation for the page as an editor. So it could be counted either as the same kind of review service that people are already providing to a publication, or because they are actually providing an editorial function in producing an overall edited page, they could list it on their CV as an edited publication. I, of course, can't guarantee that this would count as much as a peer-reviewed publication as I think the kind of process you're describing would be, but it would be a step for giving credit.
Another response.
This is continuing the discussion about the number of reviewers available, and I don't have definitive answers, but there are two observations I might make. First, some of the computer science conferences have gone to multiple tiers of reviewing, so you could have sort of quick lower level reviews that would be sort of help the flow, and then if there's enough promise from those, then they move up to a second, through several levels, and conceivably graduate students, or I might not want all my papers reviewed by graduate students, but you could imagine a process perhaps that was where something might work out if there were several convergent reviews that at lower levels that would provide evidence to kick it up to a higher level. The second observation is there's some funny balance of the forces here. I mean, we have people who are out on blogs all the time. I mean, they're putting their opinions out at the drop of a hat. Somehow that might be harnessed. Maybe that's there are people qualified and people unqualified, but somehow there are situations where people are enthusiastic about sharing their opinions, and somehow that might be able to be harnessed.
In the back here.
My question relates to the advantage or disadvantage of ESA hosting the website where all of those electronic publications might go. So there was some control by the society over it, just like there's control over their other versus sites being hosted by a plethora of institutions and individuals. So I was wondering if the panel would like to respond to that.
Moving back his head a little bit.
Okay, Joshua.
So I'm probably the least
stand
educated
up this
on this
microphone.
Oh, yes. Got to listen to my own advice. Right. So you've asked, essentially, if I understand your question, what is the implication of an individual hosting a web product on their own servers versus ESA taking responsibility to host those products? So this is something that we've thought a lot about and something we're trying to work our way through. I think what we're suggesting here is that many individuals they've had to find a solution because ESA does not have any servers. There's nowhere to host these kinds of things. But that hasn't held them back from producing digital publications. Presumably, they have servers where they're posting some of these products. So the model presently would allow for them to retain the model that we've proposed in any case would allow for them to retain those publications on those servers. Now, of course, that has downstream implications and future implications for archivability and permanence. And these are issues that have to be addressed. Steve mentioned this idea of, and we mentioned it again, this idea of peer review having an expiration date. That's a really novel concept. The idea is that it really depends on the dynamism of a website. Is it an evolving product? Is new data being added, for example, if it's an interactive database? And if so, how much change can take place in that product before it merits re-review? So those are issues that have to be resolved, and one solution might be to limit the amount of time that peer review stands for the product. Now, there are some possible results of that, some possible consequences. If you limit the length of, if peer review has an expiration date, what does that say about the product when it reaches its expiration date? Is it no longer valid? And I think that we would, or at least I would put forth the opinion that it doesn't have to mean that at all. It simply means that for the user community, it kind of gives them an anchor point to know, when was the creation of the product and so forth. But if we emphasize that element, for a tenure and review panel, I developed this website, but it expired. That's a bad thing. But there has to be some way to kind of validate web products over their life, over their useful lifetime, since they have a lifetime. Many of them have the potential to. For example, a server could go down. These kinds of things were mentioned. So an alternative is to centralize the process. So perhaps initially ESA could allow for peer review of remote products, but then over time could develop some kind of repository. And those kinds of things take time and money and planning. But assuming that could take place and ESA was forward-thinking, eventually they could provide a central repository. And many of those products could be, if not moved, at least archived on ESA. Or maybe there could be some kind of parallel publication to allow for an avoidance of loss of data and so forth. But those are issues that have to be addressed. I think in terms of our model, we want a model to be sufficiently flexible to allow us to move forward and to make progress and to not just get bogged down and not be able to do anything because we can't make decisions. But to have it be flexible enough to grow. And so anyway, a lot of these issues have to be resolved.
If I could briefly comment on how CJAI has dealt with the issue of validating versions by peer review. In our case, there is no expiration date for a review, and there's no opportunity for changing a paper once reviewed. The reviewed paper is static. If you look at the and it's deposited in various archives in that static version. There is on each paper a little bar for updates that you can click on, and you can get updates outside the static, immutable, reviewed version. We also have several authors who have expressed an interest in maintaining updated versions on their own websites, which is just great. But the reviewed version is static. That's what's reviewed.
Can I just follow up with a very quick comment, which I don't want to reply from? There's a very major project that's just been funded in Australia by the federal government. It's called TRIN, the Taxonomic Research Initiative Network, I think. And one of the planks in this is to develop interactive keys on the web for families of Australian insects. So primarily it's to develop interactive keys that are currently static dichotomous keys in the two-volume Insects in Australia. And the plan is to host that at a single portal, and people can then add other keys to it. And so there's not a refereeing process, but because it's hosted, I think, by a single site and managed by a single group, there's a sort of validating sort of process associated with it.
I think Rob would like to respond to that question, too.
Just a quick comment. I mean, I think this model of reviewing a stamp is intriguing. It sort of goes back to the what's the purpose of the professional society? I mean, the professional society comes together because you all share scholarly interests and have sort of common standards about what scholarship. So this stamp says the society, in its wisdom, you know, with the following procedures, approves that. It's sort of the value added. It's the unique capability that the society brings to the process. I'm less clear about whether the society actually needs to be run the servers, or, you know, why do they need to get in that? That's not their expertise. Their expertise is actually the imprimatur of saying this is a quality publication by the standards, by the consensus of the community.
If I may, I'll offer two comments. First, I think it's a great idea to have that certification. Secondly, I hope that taxonomists who seem to be in charge will not forget the rest of us who actually kill bugs believing. And now the question. There is already a project going on, I think University of Iowa, I don't remember exactly, called Ant Library, and they're trying to review internet resources which are related to entomology and can be used for teaching. Did anyone have interactions with them? I believe it's antlibrary.org.
Where is our Ant Web guy?
I think it's Ant.
Ant Library.
Ant,
not Ant. Ant Library.
Okay. Yeah, this is all as usual for teaching, and they're trying to peer review them and list them on their server. I think it's funded.
Yeah, so I think there are several sites in the United States and in other parts of the world that try to integrate links and group links together as a centralized site to reach out to different parts of entomology. Now, as Joshua mentioned at the very end of his talk, what we really need, I think, a lot of community discussion is first of all, what kinds of websites merit peer review? And then once we determine that something merits peer review, what are the criteria by which you're going to actually judge that merit? And so just like we have lots of paper publications, everything from handbills and flyers up through different kinds of things, there's lots of things that are printed on paper, and yet we still understand that there are only certain classes of those things that are printed on paper that really merit peer review within the context of what we consider to be good science or entomology or systematics or whatever. And so I think one of the things that we have to come to grips with, and I think that we have not yet really had that discussion, is amongst all of the different kinds of non-traditional publications, and particularly the diversity of things that can rapidly go up on the web, you know, which kinds of things are the things that are substantial enough and solid enough and written in the right way and contain the right kind of information that we really think merit a serious peer review. And I think this is really a very important point, because if in fact the society or whoever is providing whoever's going to be providing this quality stamp, if in fact the bar is set so low that anything can be can merit peer review, and anything can be approved, then it diminishes kind of the quality of these different non-traditional publications. So as a group, I think we have to consider where we want to place that bar. And I think that certainly, at least initially, placing that bar fairly high so that basically not everything can be said is peer-reviewed and is of equal quality. And so as we begin to think more about how this might be implemented, those are some of the issues I think that we're going to have to have some discussion on and some soul searching. Let's see, I'll go in the front here. Katie?
I think that the ESN has an excellent sort of format that it uses for its publications, the annals, the JEE and environmental, and I think we could sort of use that as a format to say, for example, a systematics paper or a systematics website, would it fulfill the standards that Annals has, for example, and maybe we could use our editorial boards that currently exist to establish some criteria for websites that we could apply, you know, that sort of correspond with what we use for our current publications, but those that we're going to use for peer review entities.
Yes.
That way you could get some.
So I've been on. I think I've been on the Annals board for too long, actually on the Publications Council, so I think that's a very good idea. I mean, and as you will no doubt have noticed from the presentation that Joshua made, that one of the ways that we see ESA implementing this is we've tried to co-opt as much of the process as possible and to fit it inside a process that ESA is already familiar with. So the implementation details of this, you know, are varied. So one thing that might happen is that we might convince the governing board that that maybe we could start this process out in the Annals, and maybe the Annals editorial board would be charged with making some decisions about what merits peer review and what the criteria of that review are. And I think that you're right that the existing criteria of journals in terms of content are certainly a very good place to start. But I think that there's, at some point, the review of non-traditional publications is also going to have some kind of review of presentation, for lack of a better word. So how things all integrate together, which in a kind of a traditional journal format is already fixed by the entity. So there's going to have to be some mix of those. Right. No, the focus does need to be on the scientific content.
Okay, just a comment. As regards electronic publications, it's often said that they are very convenient because some of the information can be changed afterwards in that. But I just want to make a comment that according to the proposals to the new amendments to the Code of Zoological Nomenclature for electronic publications is fixed that they cannot be changed after they are published in a digital format. So any change to them should be published in a separate new publication or commentary, which again should be peer reviewed. So as a conclusion, in my opinion, the new way of publishing, the digital publishing, does not differ so much from the paper publishing. It's just much more convenient, much more browsable, of course, much more easy to find and discover and so on. But the principle remains the same, and it exists already, I think, 400 years after establishing the first journal in London.
Yes, certainly as we begin to implement this model, and you know, if it comes out in the SEB section initially, we'll have to keep that very much in consideration, what the current code recommendation or requirements are and what the future requirements are. I think that there's lots of things that are going on and lots of publications that are being done on the web that do not actually contain new names and new nomenclatural acts. And so one will have to be careful that if one is proposing, you know, new names, new nomenclatural acts, that they're not done solely under kind of an open web-based publication. But I think that there are lots of other things that are important that are going on, and that large numbers of non-traditional publications that our members are developing, you know, will not really be hamstrung by any ICZN regulations. Derek?
Back to the issue of criteria of review. So scientific review is, I think, a no-brainer, and the functionality, sort of evaluating a website for how functional it is, also seems pretty straightforward. But my question is, and perhaps Norm, you might comment, the stability question and the sort of the technical back end of a lot of these websites. There's a great number of ways to put these websites up. Some are more stable, have greater archival nature to them, but that kind of technical knowledge is usually absent among the general review board and typical subject editors. So how would you propose to evaluate sort of the technical durability or quality of a website that's sort of behind the scenes?
Go ahead, Norm.
I personally, let's start with that question. I don't think that should be an issue. I think that should be completely transparent. And it really doesn't matter to me what goes on in the background in terms of the technical implementation. It's the product that comes out on the other end. Now, I'm not just the, you said the scientific content was a no-brainer. I'm not sure that I buy into that entirely, because I think we're thinking in terms of a completed piece of work, and certainly those will exist. But we're also thinking of things that are start small and grow and have no endpoint. I mean, 13,000 ants? 30,000 ants. I mean, if that were the criterion, then Ant Web or the kind of stuff I'm doing, you say, no, that's not anywhere near complete and not worthy of being evaluated. But I think we have to expand our criteria there a bit. I don't know about your infrastructure question.
I think sustainability should be one of the points that are used to evaluate web-based publications. The standards in this area are still emerging. There's an opportunity, I think, for libraries to engage there to help create and encourage those standards, but it definitely should be something that you're asking about, that a review board is inquiring about, because you don't want things put together, great information put together so shoddily, are hosted at a site that has no possibility or there are serious reservations about its ability to perpetuate itself into the future. And I also think the issue of change is important, to comment on another point. But change is one of the things that we can accommodate on the web in a way that we can't as well in the old print world. So though change should be looked at and considered, I wouldn't impose it as a standard for all classes of publication, because there are some classes of publications that you might want material to be added to. Not only the classes of publication, but the kinds of change that you as a society want to allow and encourage. So not all change is bad. It's available in a new and powerful way with the web, and I think those are attributes that shouldn't be discounted or are necessarily locked into something that are criteria that make it difficult for products that have that built into them as part of the possibility of the new things we can do with the web. So anyway.
About the infrastructure part of the question, this isn't necessarily something this group has to solve. NSF has an Office of Cyber Infrastructure now, so a whole new division of NSF created because of all the possible changes in the sort of the structure of science. They have folks ranging from the data grid that is, you know, massive data sets on the Internet 2 servers, and so people back in the back end that are maybe they will. The San Diego Supercomputer Center has a big project just exploring sort of how do we preserve different kinds of data sets. So this could be just one aspect of that. And NSF, this is one of the reasons you can sort of have go outside your community to the broader science community. Second, there I mentioned a project, Open Notebook Science. There's actually a wiki article now, I guess, about this. This is a fellow I know who's a chemist, but he's asking all his folks to put their observations, their lab notebooks, basically into Google Docs. The Google has now web-based and can be open access spreadsheets. You can put your data sets into there. Now we don't know how long Google's going to be around, but that might be a kind of answer for keeping even detailed data and making it available to the public and linking that in. If not Google, then hopefully somebody else will be providing that kind of service for a long term.
I might just follow up on something Norm said too. I think that these web publications they're changing really what we think about as publications. And so if we think of publications only as static units, we're still kind of looking backwards. And I think that rather than reacting negatively or only negatively to the possibility of change, we should also consider the advantages that the ability to change rapidly and to self-correct over time. And I would argue that in a responsible kind of web-based publication, that the ability to correct and expand and engage larger audiences and include more and more data would more than outweigh the disadvantages perhaps of having kind of a fixed monolithic entity. And I think that at least within systematics, I think that we have an opportunity here to develop different classes of publications that are not just kind of single standalone sorts of things, but we're talking about career engaging publications that over the course of an entire career you can implement and integrate in ways that you could never do previously. And I would argue that those kinds of publications that have had years and years of effort put together, and the synthesis and the integration that those things will allow us to come up with, and over the years they have serial peer review because you're updating, you're adding stuff to them, and when you do that to a significant event, make significant additions, it should be peer reviewed again, and you should be able to get credit for that additional add-in. But we're moving toward the ability to synthesize as individual authors and also as groups of authors, years and years and years of information, and I think that needs to be encouraged and not say that that's a bad thing because oh darn it's changing, and I don't know exactly what was there yesterday. Here.
Thank you. Okay, I just have a couple suggestions. First, I think we should consider what it means, what's the implication if you give the insignia and the stamp of approval on a work that's work in progress and dynamic. I think we all recognize that that's important to have that flexibility, but it's kind of a shift from putting the stamp of approval on the product to putting the stamp of approval on the producer for that period of time. Because basically we're saying then that we have confidence in this person to maintain this as a high quality product as it changes for the next 5 years or whatever it is. Might be more than what we're really willing to and then a possible way of dealing with that I suggest is to have the actual stamp of approval be on the static version that was reviewed and give the producer the option of having a link to that on a dynamic version so that they can make the claim that this has been reviewed and accepted and you can go back to see the reviewed version.
So it sounds like there are multiple solutions to this issue, and Steve Marshall addressed some of those, that they use a static model with links to dynamic content. An idea that I've had and that John and I have discussed is we're not committed to, but just in brainstorming, is having different kinds of insignias that apply to different kinds of digital publications. So not all digital publications would expire. That would just be a solution to those that are particularly dynamic. There are a broad range of digital publications that are absolutely static, and they're interactive. That's why they're web-based. So, and they have other kinds of content and or behaviors. They could receive a more traditional kind of peer review, which simply has a date and an insignia, and that product will stand for all time, whatever all time means for digital publications, which we have yet to work out. But then there could be another kind of insignia that would have some kind of expiration date that could be renewed. Someone could come back and reapply for peer review. They would receive a new insignia with a new date, and then it would expire potentially. And I think these are new ideas, so they haven't really been worked out, but that might be a solution to help satisfy those kinds of needs. Different publications, different kinds of publications have different needs. I think that's what we're starting to realize.
Yeah, one thing, it's not entirely clear that all of the kinds of new format publications can actually have a fixed version, and that's really one of the issues. So you can imagine a database-driven website, for instance, where you might be able to archive that data set. But then you can also imagine one in which I think probably AntWeb is, where you're linked into GBIF and you have no control over, you know, when they hit that button for the distribution, you know, what records are going to pop up at any one instance. And so when you start working with interactive sorts of non-traditional publications that draw data from multiple data sets, you don't have control over all those data sets. And yet, the ability to draw from those data sets is one of the things that gives them some of the unique functionality and additional kind of value-added stuff. So I personally think that we're going to have to at some point come to grips with the idea that we cannot insist that everything has a fixed and immutable footprint that we can go back to. That we're going to have to at some point allow that there's going to be some variation, and we're not going to be able to go back to the same kind of print on paper and know exactly maybe what was there the first time. Another implementation detail of this that I discussed with Alan Collin the other day was, you know, perhaps if these, one of the things you might submit to ESA as part of the rapid review thing is maybe you would submit an abstract, and maybe an abstract of that, you know, would be published in, say, the Annals. And that would be one way of documenting some of the basics of what that web entity was as of a particular time when peer review was granted. But there's no way you're going to be able to capture the entire thing.
I would also say, and this might be controversial, that you might consider that there are ways in which we can only just begin to imagine, some ways we can't imagine at all, that digital publication might allow us as a way to manage the workload, and in some ways as a way to impose quality. There may be some things we can do that allow publications to review themselves. For instance, when you do a Google search, everybody knows there's an algorithm that determines what you see first. And that algorithm, at least as a part, Google hasn't fully revealed what they're doing, is at least in part based on linkages from other web pages to those sites. Now, that's not the be-all, end-all, but that is one kind of information that can be used that might make the task of reviewing somewhat different and in some ways an instrument that allows us to manage what I can only imagine if we only carry forward the existing infrastructure of review and validation, the whole thing is going to die of its own weight. Because I don't see how we can begin to imagine, manage the workload of all this reviewing unless we're willing to somehow think of new ways for the technology itself and the web itself to exploit new features to help manage and do some of that reviewing for us.
Well, actually, back in the back corner, I think here was first.
My question is directed towards Encyclopedia of Life and any other basically web-based resource portals. The question is that, is there a strategy or position that this web-based portal should take in light of, in view of the perspective of a service to the public, basically because of a competition or based on websites that are maintained by amateurs or less professionally maintained, namely like Wikipedia or Wikispecies, where most people would actually get their information. There's less information, it's not as qualified, but that's where most people are getting their information. And the general public is fickle. You know, the newest stuff that comes up, that's where they're gonna get it. And Google has announced that, you know, they have plans to develop something that is gonna out-trump Wikipedia, and I believe it when Google says. So is there a strategy or is this even a concern at all in terms of this stuff? Thank you.
Okay, let me see if I can summarize that. You're wondering if the Encyclopedia of Life and any of these other initiatives have articulated a strategy for the competitive landscape of other projects that are out there trying to do similar things. And yes, we have. Our steering committee has repeatedly affirmed that the Encyclopedia of Life must be higher quality than the kind of project, for example, that Wikipedia has. And so we are incredibly committed to building this curator network that will help us achieve that. But in addition, actually, the kind of initiative that's being talked about here, a certification process, also helps us, because if we can assure that the information is high quality coming in, then our work is done. Now, that said, we are having discussions with Wikipedia, I'm not sure with Google, but to try to leverage what we each can bring to the situation. So for example, one of the things that our curators could do could be to review content at Wikipedia and do the same sort of certification timestamp thing that you guys are talking about for ESA publications. And that could be a frozen version. And actually, we are also considering having a frozen version of an EOL page with a DOI that would be citable and relatively permanent. So we're exploring a lot of different possible ways to achieve this sort of stamp of quality. But from my perspective, it really rests on having enough people willing to do the work. And whether they do that work for an ESA publication or, you know, a database that we're hopefully sharing with, or whether they do it directly at EOL, I don't really care. The idea is that the information is reviewed and that the community respects those standards. So to sort of go back to the last question, I think perhaps one of the things that could be certified could be the review process itself. So there could be standards that a dynamic resource such as AntWeb or Encyclopedia of Life would have to be able to demonstrate so that the process is what gets certified. And then it could be re-reviewed, and if certain standards are not met, then it could lose that certification. But that might be one way to improve the quality of the information in general on the web and increase the reputation of certain sources over those of others. We can't stop people from continuing to use the other sources. I use Wikipedia all the time, and Google, for that matter. But if I had an alternative and it really mattered, I would go there. So.
The general public, you're going to have all sorts of jargons and terminologies. However, something like Wikipedia, the species pages are really just not telling about telling stories. So when you have your own species pages on those, pages based by produced by taxonomists, I'm not so sure, how that could actually integrate both interests of taxonomists and also the general public.
But it would be good that those products by taxonomists could be used by Wikipedia. And it's interesting to look at the influence of Wikipedia in that regard. To be used by Wikipedia, it has to have a certain license, the most simplest Creative Commons license, or another license developed by Google, developed by Wikipedia, which most of our websites don't satisfy. Most of the content, for example, on AntWeb can't be used by by Wikipedia. And it's interesting how many complaints that is actually pushing scientists down another road that we're not used to yet to make our data completely accessible. Most of us fear getting our data online as it is, just open. In fact, a lot of remote curators from AntWeb won't reveal specimen data or other things until they publish it. But they were published on AntWeb under a creative license, which says share alike and attribute. And that's not good enough for Wikipedia. It has to be completely open, basically. And if it's completely open, it'll be reused by Wikipedia and then increase its citations and therefore have more credibility. And it's interesting how that public use, amateur use, is actually pushing me, at least in AntWeb, to rethink about how we actually think we should license our data. And at the same time, it is interesting to think about accreditation by, Entomological Society of America versus simply looking at citation indexes for that validation and also for our deans of sciences and so forth to give us credit back at our home institutions. And in one sense, that's, again, the Wikipedia model. If it's cited a lot and used a lot, it rises to the top and re-edited a lot. And that is almost a live communication. So we may be stopping the process if the more we make it stable, the more we add these constraints on it. And the more we can make it live, the more we can make it live and used by society. And in fact, this argument that print is more stable, in fact, most of these large works in ants, like the Ants of North America, was published 50 years ago. It's a stable document, but it's not a cited document or a used document anymore because it would require another great human to actually sit down and redo that work. And because there's so much more information, nobody's ever going to do that. Nobody will ever do that again. But it is possible to pick away at it through a website over years and years, like at AntWeb, and cover it and achieve that over a 20-year period. And that will be cited probably more so than Creighton's Ants of North America. So it will be changing, I think, and pushing scientists to rethink about what it is to actually publish. And I think we're at that point now.
So we're already over our time. Let's take one more question from Dave, who's been waiting patiently with the microphone in hand.
Thanks, John. Stimulated by, first of all, by previous comments and nice lead-in from Brian, I'm intrigued by the world that, or the appreciation for the spectrum of products that we can provide that Steve outlined as being valuable. I see an opposite trend going on in terms of administrations. They have a finer and finer definition of what's valuable, and it's getting down to impact, and a very, very narrow definition of impact. And it certainly doesn't yet, as far as I can tell, accommodate the impact that we have through electronic publications. I ask the panel, any of you, what do you see as the forces that will affect a positive change in this attitude among those that evaluate us and determine our success and failure in terms of advancement and even retaining jobs? Because I think that cultural change needs to happen. And it seems to be going the other way.
Well, certainly I think within the academic community, which part of the initiative here is to try and address that directly. And what is needed there is society, recognized society support through peer review. Because academic administrators understand and value peer review as the gold standard. So at some level, we have to learn to play that game. And the way that we play that game is we work within our society and we say, okay, we understand this is a problem. Let's find a solution for it. And let's apply peer review. Peer review is not the only thing that gives something credit. Lots of things, citing usage. There's lots of things there that are coming out, but I've talked to my academic administrators, and they don't know how to evaluate usage. They don't know how to evaluate hits as a valuable statistic. They have nothing to compare it to. They don't know how to evaluate the fact that something might come up as number one or two in a Google hit search. They have no, there's no background for that for them, and there's no established criteria for that. But what they do understand is peer review. And so if we can get our society to say that, yes, you know, the things that we're doing are valuable, and we can establish criteria for reasonable peer review, that will allow our young assistant professors and associate professors and everyone else to be able to link into an established model that is understood and gain what credit we can from that. That's not to say that as we move forward, we shouldn't be looking for ways to establish other kinds of criteria by which the unique nature of these publications have. We should be doing that as well. But I think that we really have to take what administrators use now and empower the people that are in academic situations to take that, you know, something that academic leaders understand, and to be able to use that to their benefit. And that is something that I see that we're sorely lacking for, and that's really, was the one of the main impetus for trying to organize this this symposium. Anyone else want to?
We're moving in the same unfortunate direction. It's interesting when, as a taxonomist, I've always felt that the highest form of product that I could aspire to would be a really good monograph. And now I see that monograph in a very different world, fully integrated on the web and so on. So I think that hasn't changed for me. But that has no chance of getting a high impact factor right. In this world today. It's got a very low chance because it can't get in the right journals. And I'm not sure that there's a direct relationship between peer review and the impact factors as related to particular journals. It's very convenient to just say, I don't have to worry about evaluating a particular product because it's in the right place. We all have our manuscripts peer reviewed, but if you don't put them in the right journal, that's an issue. And I don't know how do you get around that.
So, I mean, don't get me started on impact factors. I mean, we all know that the way impact factors are calculated are for publications that have a half-life of a year or 2 years, whereas systematics publications usually have a half-life of 25 or 50 or 100 years. And there's basically no way you can fight and win that game. So you have to find a game that you can try and win. And one of the games we can try and win is we can take peer review and we can empower the people that are working and empower them with peer review that administrators know while we're working on other ways to indicate. So for instance, I do the various things for the Lacewing Digital Library, and I can tell my department head that I can document 10,000 usages or 1,000 usages or 2,000 usages within a year. And then he'll look at an impact factor of 1.7, and to him, he says that's an established criteria where I can show actual usage, but there is no framework for him to evaluate that, and so he doesn't want to use that criteria because there's no framework behind it, there's no structure behind it, and I think that as we move forward and other sorts of criteria are developed and there develops a structure behind these other review formats, then they'll be accepted more and more within an academic environment.
I guess I used the word force because I'm wondering if there might not be another way to approach this from the user community. Some way to enlist their more direct evaluation rather than just a hit. Maybe a hit and a grenade over the wall at the same time, something like that. I don't know.
So in my pessimistic view, you know, you can beat administrators over the head and make no dent, right? So, I mean, they're ultimately, they're going to accept what they want to accept, and they accept what they know and what there's a structure behind. And so, you know, we need to, like you say, we need to develop those new metrics for evaluating new publications, but we also have to recognize that, you know, we work in an environment that is at a particular place in time, and we need to have the ammunition in our favor to be able to operate, you know, at that place and time.
John, I just have
One more quick comment by Joshua, and then we're gonna wrap up here.
So one thing that's been on my mind in all this is, you know, what's the next step? Where do we go from here? So, and just thinking about your question and being a young person and maybe coming at this from a different perspective because I don't have all the baggage. We talked about having baggage and how that stays with us, and it's difficult to overcome. So, if our society has enough critical mass, is it possible for us to communicate our collective opinions to administrators? And not as an individual go to our administrator and say, you know, I deserve, you know, to be validated on this level, you know. But would it be possible for our society to prepare some kind of formalized letter in correlation with decisions that we're making and to send those out to review boards across the country and say, you know, our society has agreed upon these standards, these criteria, and this is how we evaluate each other. Maybe if we presented a few discrete points, they could kind of latch into and maybe propose some solutions, some ideas for them. Just the fact that our society as a whole was sending out that letter, not just individuals, that could be a voice for change. I don't know. I'm a young person. It's just an idea. So
I would like, just as a kind of a point of reference as Joshua and I move forward with this, I would like a show of hands of everyone who would encourage us to move forward with trying to establish peer review for non-traditional publications within ESA, you know, something along the lines of the model that we proposed here today. Okay, does anybody think we're completely off base and we shouldn't continue to move this forward? Oh, isn't that nice?
We all loved her.
Yeah. So I discussed it. It needs to, if it goes forward through ESA, it needs to actually, the public or the governing board needs to get a double whammy on this. They need to get one coming through the CISEB section with validation from the CISEB section. They also need to get validation coming up out of the annals and through the Publications Council. So. Right. So I mean, as you know, I've been thinking about this for a number of years, and I've positioned myself to be able to provide that those kind of trains of thought. So, in kind of wrapping up here, I'd like to express my appreciation and thanks to all the symposium speakers, all very excellent and thought-provoking presentations. And I personally would like to especially thank Robert Allen and Stephen Smith for coming down, coming to see a group of people that they, you know, have no idea what we really do, but we understand that the things that they're involved in are very relevant to some of the issues that we're facing here in non-traditional publication, so we appreciate their time in particular to come down. I also wanted to thank the SEB section, again, for giving us this opportunity to actually bring kind of a more public face to the issues of non-traditional publications in peer review. Also, we would be very happy to hear from any of you who would like to have a significant voice in helping us shape policies that we, as we can kind of refine this model. So I'm not sure what we're going to do this. Well, we'll probably send out an email through the SEB list server and solicit people who might want to get on a mailing list or something so we can try and flesh out some of the ideas that we've said here. So we you know, I've been thinking about this for a number of years, and I've been roping Joshua into it, and I think he's very interested. I mean, he's one of the young scientists. He's got a great future in front of him, and so he's very interested in this, and I'm sure that there are a lot of other, young scientists out here who have been facing these problems. And I've been facing this problem ever since I got to Texas A&M in 1995, and I started doing web works, so I have a little longer perspective, but, you know, there are a lot of you out there that are going to be in, you know, my position soon, and, you know, help us help you. Any other final comments? Okay, so wish you all a very safe journey home as we finish up with ESA annual meeting this afternoon.